Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the World Cricket Show, the world's favourite cricket show. Not a claim that's been rigorously fact-checked, but one I'm nevertheless prepared to bandy around. My name is Adam Bayford and I'll be your host for this one. And joining me in real life is none other than Tony Kerr.
It's been a while.
How you doing, Tone?
Hey, good, thanks. Yeah, very good.
My first note here, it's been a while.
It really has been a while. It's been a while.
Yeah. Where have you been? What have you been up to?
Hang on, remind me what date we last did one of these.
I think we did it, was it like early March?
June
at the end of the India Test Series.
Early March.
How long have we been doing the podcast for, would you say?
Good question. It feels like longer than early March, but I'll take it.
Yeah. I'll take my word for
it. Yeah. What's been going on? Well, we're out of lockdown here. That happened quite a while ago.
Yeah. Early March, in fact.
We both got jabbed, didn't we?
We did.
First jabs. And what is that, your second note?
That's my second note, yeah. I'm all jabbed up and you're all jabbed up too.
We are half jabbed up. We both got our first jabs on Monday, which is which is quite nice. You got in there first.
Yeah.
This is your one. You barged your way to the front of the queue.
Pipped you by a couple of hours. Although actually you got your letter about a week before me because you're so much older. And just didn't get around to booking it.
No, that's not quite true. I did call quite a lot, but it was busy.
How have you been feeling afterwards? Have you got away without any side effects?
Yeah, pretty good. I mean, I couldn't really... I was slightly hungover on Monday, so I don't know. I was quite tired in the evening, but I'm not sure which was the stronger force in that tiredness.
You're going, it's just knocked me out. It has knocked me out.
Not too bad. Yeah, a bit weary yesterday. But yeah, one of our good friends... It's taken a bit of a hit.
Mm.
It's gone down.
Friend of the show, Dave, one of the film pod boys.
Yeah.
Well, so he got jabbed at the same time as me. It's something quite sort of funny about the way it works. Like, it obviously makes perfect sense from a, you know, medical scientific point of view that it's going in age group order. But it is, I don't know, there's something quite funny about it that it's like, firstly, it's revealing everyone's age. As it sort of works its way through, like, your colleagues. But secondly, yeah, it just feels... I saw so many people I know there. Maybe this is obviously like a product of the fact that we still live in the same small place where we went to school. But so many people I went to school with, yeah, just like turned up at the same time as Dave. Didn't know he was coming at the same time. It's like, oh, yeah, there you are. Just feels like we're going in year groups. It's like, right, year nine, come on, your turn. You know, this doesn't mean nothing to the listeners. Chris Walden was there. James Ridout was there. All the big guns.
What a party.
But yeah, anyway, it's amazing to have been jabbed. I was feeling, you know, a little bit emotional afterwards, feeling very sort of grateful to everyone involved who's got it to this point, got that needle in my arm. That's what it's all been about. Feeling very grateful to, you know, Matt Hancock. He's having a good week, isn't he?
Well, he'll be pleased to hear that.
There is actually a chance that he might listen to this podcast because turns out he's a big cricket fan.
Well, yeah, he was doorstepped, wasn't he, the other morning wearing, I don't know, a couple of years old now, two or three, 4 years, I don't know, a few years old kind of England training top and then sort of jogging off into the distance. Yeah. I did enjoy Stuart Broad's quote tweet of that saying he was kind of half expecting Hancock to go through his bowling action sort of six strides into running away from the reporters.
So, Matt, if you're listening... you know, you've possibly got other things you should be doing this week, but, you know, it's good to have you on board. The more the merrier.
Absolutely.
It's good to have a listener, isn't it? So,
anyway, it has been good. Yeah, and hopefully everyone out there is also seeing things move in the right direction. I know it's not, things are slightly patchy worldwide, aren't they? But hopefully, hopefully most places are experiencing some sort of positive direction now.
Yes, and it certainly seems to be the case in the UK. At least as of today, we're recording this on Thursday evening, and one of the signs of that is that fans, supporters, crowds are coming back into sporting events. I did read that there could even be full capacity at the Euros, but certainly they've announced that it'll be 70% capacity at the Edgbaston test, the second test of the series, England v New Zealand, which is something we're going to be talking about today. We have got a lot on the agenda. As we say, we've been away for a couple of, you know, a good couple of months, but that there actually hasn't been loads of cricket, or not international cricket anyway. Obviously, we had the IPL, which has had to be suspended. The county championships been rolling on for a month or so now. But not a lot of international stuff. But England's international summer is about to get underway. As I say, we've got two tests against New Zealand, followed by five tests against India. And there's the World Test Championship final sandwiched in the middle of that as well. And as I say, fans back in the grounds. I don't know, it all feels very exciting, Tone. So should we start there? Should we start with, you know, let's unleash our full, comprehensive, in-depth preview of that England v New Zealand series? Because yeah, it's the start of a very busy summer of international cricket in England.
Yeah, it's quite a crazy crazy schedule, as is, you know, it's sort of relatively normal. This kind of seems a bit more crazy than usual, obviously. And with, you know, it's going to be against the backdrop of a myriad of other massive sporting events which are going to be fighting for attention this summer. But yeah, I mean, it looks pretty wild.
There is a danger that England v New Zealand, you know, well, actually the weather's a little bit better today, but if it was a kind of mizzly Wednesday morning at Lourdes, you know, there is a danger that could get partially at least overshadowed by like the build up to the Euros. So I'll need to take my jumper off in a minute because it's boiling in here, Tim, but I'm wearing my grey England football away kit that I've from 1996 that I've just bought.
Well, I did think this was the our Euros special. So.
Yeah, it does. I will say I'm a bit more excited about that. I don't know. Is that maybe that's not something to admit on a cricket podcast? But still my favourite thing you've ever said on this show was going into England v Sri Lanka in May 2014, saying that just as the 2014 World Cup in Brazil was about to start, and you saying it was like that being excited for that series was like going to bed on Christmas Eve excited for sunrise with Eamon Holmes.
And you know, you've wheeled that one out a few times now.
Is there an element of that?
Have I not come out with anything better? No, since then?
7 years ago,
for God's sake.
I don't know. Well, I'm more excited about it than I am about sunrise with Eamon Holmes, I've got to say. I actually think this could be.
Well, I mean, it's a big summer for sport and for broadcast news. You know, we've got GB News coming up, the launch of. That's exciting, isn't it?
That's true, yeah.
Bayford and Friends.
Yeah.
The new kind of all opinion, all action, late night opinion spouting thing.
We could just rename this podcast Bayford and Friends. It's basically all opinion. All Bayfield opinions.
Yeah.
All day, all night. Thanks very much. No, I actually am very excited about this series. And I want to say that up top because I have got a couple of grumbles. I've got a couple of kind of gripes about things to get that I do want to get off my chest. But I do really want to start with something positive because, as I say, there hasn't been that much international cricket lately or in the last couple of months. And then in the, you know, preceding 12 plus months before that, it's obviously, I don't know if you've noticed, you know, I don't know if you've been aware, Tony, but that, you know, there has been a pandemic and everything's been. Obviously, it goes without saying in all walks of life, since this case, but in sport and in cricket, everything's felt very strange and weird and, you know, like it's been missing something. And that's still going to be the case up to a point. But with fans coming back in, as I say, at 70% capacity at Edgbaston, up to 18,000 fans allowed in each day. I don't know, like that alone, we're going to get into the fact that this could be a really entertaining series with, you know, New Zealand being an extremely entertaining, exciting team. But you know, that alone, the fans coming back in is something to be very excited about.
Yeah, it's gonna be huge. And that, you know, it to a certain extent, it feels like obviously the last year everyone's kind of lost a year, the crap kind of start to the summer weather wise it all also feels like I've sort of lost May. So kind of we're sort of gone from, I don't know, very much being in this like this pandemic world to all of a sudden looking ahead to like just a few days away, yeah, 70% crowd at Edgbaston, which is that is going to be a thrill. There's no doubt about it. And you know, you look through the summer, and you know, as I said, there are going to be sporting distractions, but there's so much cricket to look forward to, and hopefully good cricket too. I'm pretty excited.
Me too, Tane. And I think in particular this series, I mean, I'm looking forward to all of it, but I think if anything, this is the bit that I'm most excited about, is this two Test New Zealand series, which might seem curious. Maybe it's just because it's the thing that's about to happen, and because it does feel like such a breath of fresh air to have fans back in. But I've been slightly surprised that, you know, it does feel like there's a very low key build up. I suppose that's always the case with this kind of early series of the English summer. That is usually the case. But I have seen a few articles. I saw George De Bell being quite sort of down about the series, which I found quite surprising. You know, sort of saying like, I don't even know why they're playing this. It's not part of the World Test Championship. Which you don't need to get into a big discussion about it, but for me, it's
irrelevant.
Completely irrelevant. It's not of interest to me at all. You know, it makes no difference to me whether it is or it isn't. But I really think this could be an absolute cracker. I think it's two teams who look reasonably well matched. I think you know, we'll get into this, but I think New Zealand are the better team, but with home advantage for England, that could be a real leveler. And then you throw into the mix that New Zealand haven't been to England since 2015, and when they came in 2015, that was an absolutely fantastic series, if you remember that. So, you know, two of the best tests played in England this century. Yeah, it is, you know, with fans back in, potentially the first kind of quote unquote normal cricket played in England for 2 years. It just feels very, very exciting that, you know, what a way to start the summer.
Yeah, I don't want to. Well, perhaps I'm preempting your second grumble here, okay. But the stuff that we've heard from Silverwood about it being this summer being a good warm up for the Ashes, it annoyed me more than it should have done. And I've got no massive beef with Silverwood yet. Not that I'm looking for it.
You're spoiling for a fight.
But that to me was one of the more bizarre. I mean, yeah, we've talked about it before. That and you know, it's a kind of, it's a well worn irritation of a few people now, isn't it? The fact that English cricket seems to be just ever constantly gearing towards the next Ashes series. And I get that, and there's nothing wrong with you know, laying the foundation for what in normal times would be be a big tour and obviously a huge achievement if England could go to Australia and win. Enormous achievement. But in putting that all aside, and you know, again, in normal times, that shouldn't be the overriding thing. Should be actually just what's in front of you next, and you know, putting on a good show for the paying supporters. But in this moment, describing the matches that, as we said, you know, fans are going to be coming back to, supporters are going to be coming to, cricket returning to normality, and the absolute buzz that is going to bring, that people are just going to be popping in to see a warm-up for the Ashes, which no one is going to be going to, you know, in normal times, only a sort of select few England supporters would be able to make the trip down to watch the Ashes in person. The fact that we've got Test cricket returning in front of a home crowd this summer, that should be the be all and end all. And it's that should be plenty enough for them.
Yeah, for anyone who didn't see this, I found this article from The Guardian last week. Chris Silverwood wants England to use summer as preparation for Ashes. And his quotes are about how, you know, this is all about getting the team right, getting the balance right for when they go to Australia. And it, not quite putting it in these terms, but it did. The inference was that it's almost like a warm up for the Ashes, or it's about kind of practicing and honing things so they're ready for Australia. And as you say, that's a long standing frustration. But it's seldom, I think, articulated quite so explicitly as it perhaps was there. And I just feel like, I do think that could come back to bite him on the behind, that, because like New Zealand are much too good for that kind of attitude. It would still be frustrating and it would be arrogant, but it would be more understandable if it was Sri Lanka and Pakistan coming this summer. Well, Pakistan and Reggae, but you know, if it was Sri Lanka and Bangladesh, where they're playing Ireland or something. But New Zealand and India are number one and two in the world. they're actually better than Australia. And yes, obviously the Ashes is the pinnacle for England. Winning in Australia is probably, apart from possibly winning in India, is the biggest challenge for an England cricket team. But it just seems it seems very silly to be saying that, because I'm sure the New Zealand India players won't be too too happy about that either.
Yeah, I just, well,
puts a lot of pressure on England too, because they could easily lose both of these home series and possibly even quite handsomely.
And then go down to Australia and be turned over there. And I just think it was just massively sort of tone deaf, and I don't know. It's just a ridiculous thing to maybe, you know, clearly you would expect in any organization or any team or anything that people will, you know, it is possible for you to be in the moment and also planning for the future. But it's a weird, I don't know whether that was just, you know, the new line that the journalists took out of that interview, and that it was, you know, it wasn't the kind of, he wasn't making all the plays with that, you know, that angle. But either way, pretty disappointing, really.
I guess, yeah, this is a bad analogy. I'm trying to think of an analogy in another sport, but would it be like, going into the French Open talking about how you were using it as a warm-up for Wimbledon, or...
it'd be like going to bed on Christmas Eve and your mum saying, look, just... I know you're excited about lunch tomorrow, but... You know, don't expect too much. I'm just trying to get stuff right for Easter Sunday. You know, that's what it would be like. That's to continue the Christmas analogies.
I've just realized after all these years that when you were talking about going to bed on Christmas Eve, being excited for sunrise with Eamon Holmes, I thought you were talking about Santa coming, presents in the morning, but you're actually talking about Christmas lunch. That's the thing you're excited about, going to bed. Well, anyway, as you say, like, right.
So look, we're going to have a cracking Easter lunch, but just, you know, night. We're going to be trying out a few new, a few new vegetables, and, you know, we're going to rest turkey tomorrow. We're going to use seagull. Part the potatoes.
James Bracey's coming round. Yeah, as you say, it just, rightly or wrongly, you know, the impression that comment gives off is that England think they've got this New Zealand series in the bag. They can afford to experiment and, not necessarily experiment, but just rest and rotate. And, you know, I think I would posit that is not the case, that they haven't got this series in the bag at all. And in fact, possibly, yeah, it's closer to the opposite. How do you then feel about the idea of rest and rotation through the summer? Because that is what they've talked about. And, you know, I think we obviously discussed it during the India series, and I think there's some merit in it given the bubble situation and, you know, how much time the players are having to spend away from home and in biosecure bubbles and keeping them fresh mentally. But as you were just saying, with fans back and there being such a buzz around the summer, you know, is it justifiable to be kind of resting and saving players for this tour to Australia, sort of sacrificing or compromising these series on that basis? You know, if they need to rest and rotate to keep them fresh throughout the summer, that's one thing. But if you're just sort of trying to keep them fresh for another series later in the year, I don't know. How do you feel about that?
I mean, yeah, I don't know. I pretty mixed. I mean, you look at the schedule, and obviously there's the New Zealand tests, then there's a whole swathe of T20s and ODIs against Sri Lanka and Pakistan, which obviously will involve a whole different batch of players mostly. Then five tests against India, then there's potentially obviously the T20 World Cup, and then and it goes on and on. I don't know. I think clearly things are easing up, and you by the 21st of June supposedly. Yeah, life will be normal in England. So, yeah, any sense of bubble fatigue, I think, surely drops away. It is hard. I know clearly a lot of players or quite a few players over the last year have pulled out of tours or pulled out of tournaments with, you know, citing, you know, struggles and stuff. So, I don't know. I find it very hard to be in their shoes because I just don't know what the strains are. It must be hard enough. It's probably mentally hard enough to be a cricketer anyway, an international cricketer, because it's just such a damn hard sport to play, let alone when you layer on, you know, the difficulties of not having, you know, that your kind of support, what do you call it?
Like
support networks around you. So I don't know. I think they've just got to make the best of what they can. I don't think you can be, it's probably another year where it's not too critical of things if they go wrong. I mean, clearly what happened in India, that wasn't a case of, that was just sort of misplaced priorities rather than the rest and rotation.
Because yeah.
Well, you can, I think you can both rest and rotate, but also prioritize the right thing.
You can both rest and rotate. I sort of agree with you that, like, if things go badly wrong this year, how critical should we be on the basis that it is still a strange year and there are still bubbles and things, or at least, you know, there are at the moment, there may be later on as well. But obviously, like, this is actually a massive year for England. It's a huge year. They've already been to India and lost. They've got, as I say, these two series now in the summer against 1 and 2 in the world who are, I mean, England don't often lose at home, but these are probably two teams that are better equipped to win in England than almost any that we've seen for a long time. So that's a huge, huge challenge, both of those series. Then they've got a World T20, a T20 World Cup. Always want to say World T20. They've got a T20 World Cup, which, you know, it's not like they're nailed on to win, but they will be, you know, they'll be, I think, probably disappointed if they don't at least, you know, go far in that. So there's pressure there. And then they're going to Australia. So, you know, it's not out of the question that they could lose all three of those test series, having lost in India already. If they don't win the World T20, you know, like, you know, this could be a, it could be a, what's the, there's a Latin expression, isn't it? Like anus,
horribilis.
It could be an anus mirabilis or an anus horribilis. We shall see. Could be one or the other.
Yeah. I mean, that's quite a negative outlook. I'd say. Yeah. You know, and they could all, you know, yeah, I don't know. No, I agree. Equally, you could say it's all there's play for. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
I think
it could be an amazing, if they win all of that, it could be an incredible year.
I mean, it's a lot.
My point being just that it seemed, you know, there is a lot of pressure on them, and it's like that is a challenge to manage the playing time and stuff, and knowing that there are other series coming up and stuff, and you can't just think about the game today. They have to take all that into consideration, but to then actually come out and say, our focus is the Ashes, I don't know, it just gives off a very bad impression, I think. And yeah, as I say, especially because New Zealand are a very good team, perhaps we could just talk about them first. I look at that New Zealand side. I mean, yes, they actually haven't played that much test cricket over the last few years, but what they have played, you know, when they have played, they've done exceedingly well. They don't have a tremendous record away from home. Their record at home is frighteningly good, you know, imperiously good, not even really losing many test matches at home. Yes, this will be a different challenge, but conditions in England might, you know, yes, with a different ball and things like that, but conditions won't be, it's not like going for them, it's not like going to India or Australia. So I think they will be pretty confident, especially because their bowling attack is terrifying, I think, for the opposition. They've got four fast bowlers in the top 20 in the ICC bowling rankings. Tim Southee at 6, Trent Bolt, lovely Trenty at 13, and Neil Wagner up at number 3. Since the start of 2019, Neil Wagner is averaging 19.7 in 11 test matches. I'm still not sure that people take him as seriously as they should. You know, I'm not sure many people, if you ask people to name, if you just grab someone off the street, scruff of the neck, and said, name the 10 best fast bowlers in the world, I'm not
sure.
Well,
they're pretty strong to name any. Have you seen some of the pointless clips that have floated around of cricket featuring? No. Where it'd be like, name any cricketer from like the last 10 years or something, or like, you know, name anyone involved in cricket. And like Ian Botham was like a pointless answer, and like right. Alistair Cook had one or something. It was like, there's just absurd levels of you know, lack of knowledge of cricket for the general public.
For some reason, I just imagined when you said that, I thought you meant that they asked Ian Botham to name a cricketer from the last 10 years and he couldn't come up with one. Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of depressing, actually, isn't it? But also not necessarily that surprising.
No, so I don't know if, yeah.
Where would not you sure. get, how many people would you have to ask before they named Neil Wagner?
you chuck in Jameson as well.
Well, I was going to say, maybe the best, potentially the best of the lot. That's good, Tane. Say that again, because I think I talked all over it. Wait.
Give me a break.
Let's start again, Tane. No, start again.
No, I'm not even going
to.
No.
Hello and just, welcome to the world.
God's sake.
Go on,
Tane. I think he's going to be all right. I think I'll get on.
Thanks very much. Thanks for coming. See you next week. Carl Jameson, obviously the new kid on the block, but has been devastatingly good since coming in. So I don't think they will play all four in this series, if only because, well, Trent Bolt, I think, is definitely not going to play the first test, possibly won't play the second test either. But I think there will be times when they do play, because he's injured, I should say, Trent Bolt. I think there'll be times when they do play all four. And that is incredibly exciting, because it's not very often that you see a world-class pace quartet in action altogether in Test cricket. You obviously think of West Indies in the 1980s. South Africa did it a few years ago, but it didn't last very long because it was Steyn, Morkel, Philander, Rabada, but Rabada was coming in just as Steyn and Morkel were going out. So it just doesn't happen very often, but it could happen here with New Zealand, and perhaps they're not quite on that level of West Indies 1980s or that South Africa quartet, but they're not that far behind.
Well, we're going to come on to England as well, I'm sure, but if I know this podcast like I think I do. But actually, yeah, you know, when you look at that and you look on the other side of the pitch, obviously, you know, some high-profile absentees on the England side, but yeah, really quite keen to see Overton and Robinson in action. You know, they're producing some unbelievable numbers this season. So actually, yeah, it could be another massive kind of shootout of sort of pace and swing bowling.
Something to throw into the mix is that I'm not really sure what conditions to expect it, because you sort of think, oh, England in May, especially given the weather we've had, you do imagine that it's going to be grey skies and the ball hooping around. But by all accounts, England have asked for relatively flat wickets to be prepared, again, to help sort of ready them for Australia. So it may not be, you know, that kind of traditional, you know, Jimmy Anderson swinging it around corners. You know, you'd imagine that someone like Tim Southey would enjoy those kind of conditions. If it is a bit flatter, if the weather actually improves and we are going to have a heat wave next week, maybe not quite the same. But then, you know, I mentioned Neil Wagner's numbers, which are phenomenal, but whether he'll enjoy the Duke's ball quite so much as he enjoys the Kookaburra ball in other parts of the world. So there's unknowns here. And that's interesting. You know, I'm fascinated, Tone, to get to the bottom of some of this.
Well, yeah, I'm sure he will.
Just a quick word on the New Zealand batting. I think it's a pretty solid lineup on paper, and Tom Latham is, you know, one of the best opening batsmen in the world at this point. Ross Taylor, incredibly experienced. Henry Nicholls is a good player as well. Again, the conditions mean, you know, you'd expect some of them at least to have some difficulty in these conditions, you know, against the England bowlers. So it does, yeah, it just opens up a lot of kind of, again, I'm fascinated, absolutely fascinated to see how that plays out. But the ace in the hole, of course, for New Zealand is lovely Kane Williamson, a genuine great of the modern era, Tone. I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, undoubtedly.
How much are you looking forward to watching him bat on a good time zone?
Yeah, true, actually. Not going to bed or falling asleep when he's kind of 30 not out, and then waking up to kind of read all kinds of praise.
Well, given my nap schedule at the moment, I wouldn't necessarily rule out that happening here either. But yeah,
that second shot could take its toll. I mean, yeah, I very much so. To answer your question, I think just quite keen to enjoy and luxuriate in this New Zealand side over the next couple of weeks and into that World Test Championship final, which, you know, you'd think they will go in as favourites, given the, you know.
Do you think so?
I think so. The conditions, presumably the conditions will favour them more so, or, you know, they'll enjoy them more than India, but, you know, that's not a given anymore. But also, I think just the preparation, obviously having played two tests, India arriving a bit later. So I mean, that's going to be a great, just a fascinating contest, a one-off test match with, you know, obviously a unique prize on the line. Obviously the first time it's being played, you know, a New Zealand side that you wonder, you know, how much better they can get than they have been. Obviously, BJ Watling is retiring, isn't he, after this tour? Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be interesting.
Well, yes, I mean, Southey and Wagner are kind of coming towards the tail end of their careers as well. So, yeah, it could be that this is the sort of the peak, the zenith of this team. And, there, you know, there's a question about this is an exaggeration, but is it a kind of golden generation? You know, who's coming through? But then Kyle Jameson's coming through. And we thought this about the New Zealand team in 2015 under Brendan McCullum. And actually, they have continued it. They have sustained it. So
yeah, I'm not going to write off New Zealand as a test play nation, of course, but you do. Yeah, it seems like this is a it is certainly a golden generation side. So you know, it would be fitting. It would be pretty cool if they came over and took back the World Championship, Test Championship. It's not a mace, is it?
No.
What's bigger than a mace? I don't know.
A dish.
I don't know what it looks like. I'm trying to think of what would be more impressive. The trouble is that
scepter.
They went mace, and there's just nowhere to go from there. So, but yeah, I'm just looking forward to really enjoying this New Zealand side over the next month.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Well, what about England then? I mean, it's quite an interesting squad, quite an interesting team selection. There are some places up for grabs. There's obviously no Jofra Archer, who's injured, and there are some, you know, possibly some long-term concerns about Jofra Archer's injury, but we don't need to get into those now because there's still a lot that we don't know about that. There's no Ben Stokes either because of injury, and there's none of England's IPL contingent either, including Joss Butler and Chris Wokes, both of whom may well have played. So there's not many new faces here, but there's, you know, it's not England's first choice 11. There are, you know, there are some guys sort of trying to stake a claim in this squad, and there will be at least one debut because Ben Foulkes has been ruled out and is actually out for 3 months, I think, after a freak injury, a freak accident where he slipped on the dressing room floor in socks and tore his hamstring.
Yeah, I mean, you say freak, it didn't happen to Zach Crawley a couple of months ago.
That's true, and actually it almost happened to me on the way in here.
Yeah, I mean, that is genuinely devastating.
Varnishing your floors here, so I nearly went over.
I was trying to rule you out of the podcast. I mean, that is genuinely devastating for folks because his story over the last few years, you know, he's obviously kind of, he's shone so brightly, but in such brief moments.
Hasn't played a test at home yet.
No, exactly. And, you know, Lord's test to open the summer, yeah, against, yeah. I mean, you hope he figures at some point this summer, but.
Well, if he's out until at least mid-August, I can't really see it happening because they'll want him to, you know, you'd imagine they'd want him to play some championship cricket first at the very least. I suppose it depends what happens if Butler comes back or if Bracey doesn't take his chance, and if Butler comes back and has an awful few games, then things might be different. But it is, as you say, it's such a pity for folks because he had a real opportunity here to kind of nail a place down, make himself undroppable, because he's had to fight his way back into the team, and you sort of feel like he's never quite had the fair run of it, but he really had an opportunity here. As it is, I mean, this is very hasty, but I wouldn't be stunned if he doesn't play for England again, because now, well, either Bracey comes in and takes his chance, or Butler comes back, and if he does well, you know, they might not go back to folks. So, I mean, that might be really hasty, because they may well think, well, he's clearly the reserve keeper to go to Australia, and if Butler breaks a finger or something, you know, so who knows? But it wouldn't be that surprising to me if they think, well, that, you know, that's it now. Like, that if he doesn't, if they don't, automatically think we need to give him another chance, if you see what I mean.
That would be incredibly hard. I mean, I agree that the door...
I mean, I'd pick him. He'd be one of the first names on the team sheet for me, but yeah. I'm not in charge.
You know, if you look at life as a series of sort of doors opening and closing, you know...
Yeah, I've read your self-help book, yeah.
Clearly, the door is open and he's been unable to get through it. That would be tough. I assume that they'll keep him in mind, and you know, he's certainly not. I don't think the story's over for him, but yeah, that's just. I don't know. Just they need to get the bloody players wearing some flip flops or something in the dressing room. What are they doing? Wandering around, slipping over in socks.
Crocs, mate.
Crocs.
Get some Crocs. They don't just look sexy. They're very practical as well. This is what I keep insisting to my wife.
Your Crocs and socks combo. I don't know. It's just, yeah, desperately unfortunate for sure. But again, you know, then you say, you know, Ben Fokes is lost in the short term, at least. A return for Haseeb.
Yeah, Haseeb Hameed back in the squad.
Which has kind of illuminated lots of people this week over the last couple of days. Because, I mean, again, that's another story where, yeah, you hope we're kind of coming to the, yeah, we've sort of gone full circle and it's back to the good times. Or at least it's back to the kind of the promise of the good times.
Yeah. Well, what is it, 4 years since he was last in England squad? Or slightly more, actually, because, you know, he came in, looked so impressive on debut in India, then broke a finger and then was out for the rest of that tour and then went back to the championship and averaged 9 that summer in 2017. And, you know, people wondering, not without cause, whether he would, you know, whether actually his career was over or, you know, heading towards being over. So I genuinely felt a little thrill when I read that tweet. You sent it to me, actually, to say that Haseeb Hameed had been picked. And, you know, I have seen people say, not unreasonably, that it's a bit hasty, that actually his numbers look quite good this season, but he hasn't really had to play a particularly good bowling attack yet. I'm sure there's some truth in that, but the potential never went away. The talent never went away. And if the temperament is there again, that is very exciting. I'm not saying pick him yet necessarily, but it's just exciting to think that he is in the frame again.
Yeah, and exactly. Because what he did in India was, again, it was such the briefest of flashes of kind of brilliance. And I think everyone really just kind of latched on because he was so young and he kind of looked so, yeah, he just, you know, and he was, you know, warding off.
Well, he was 20 at the time. He's now 24. So
he's still quite young.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of the England batting, there's a real mixed bag of championship form there. I think the top seven will be Burns, Sibley, Crawley, Root, Lawrence, Pope and Bracey. Now of those, that's assuming that they don't play Haseeb Hameed. Now of those, Pope and Burns are both averaging in the 60s in the championship so far. Lawrence has had a good start too. I think he's averaging around 52, something like that. Zach Crawley less so. And Dom Sibley struggled to even get on the field, to even get on the park. Because of rain and so on. I think he even tried to play a second 11 game and that was rained off as well. So, so it is a bit of a mixed bag. I mean, that's a top 17 that's got a lot of potential. Like it's quite a, I keep using the word exciting, but it's quite an exciting lineup for England. You know, the likes of Pope and Lawrence, you know, do feel like they're going to be key players for England for a long time. But it also looks a little bit fragile. Like there's not much experience in there. I know Burns has been around for a few years at this point and Sibley has been kicking around for a while now too, but you do, I think if you're that New Zealand, if you're that very good New Zealand bowling attack, you look at that England top seven and think,
yes,
they're not quite drooling, you know, they're starting to sort of swill a bit of saliva around. There's a vulnerability about that. And then when you throw in, you know, we'll talk about the bowling attack, the possible makeup of the bowling attack, but a real weakness for England at the moment is the tail. And we saw this in India and it's been the case for a while now, but you know, even if you imagine that England's first choice bowling attack at the moment, I'm not quite sure what that is, but it'll be some combination of, you know, it could be Anderson, Broad, Archer, Leach, say, or if, you know, maybe Wood is in there, but there's no number eight there, is there? There's not even really a number nine. So, you know, this is the, for all that people used to kind of sneer at the idea of picking a spinner or like including in the criteria that they can bat a bit, you know, the kind of Ashley Giles thing. Jack Leach, you absolutely should play and absolutely should be England's number one spinner. The fact that he's not got much about him with the bat, you know, this is one of the reasons why England liked Don Best, because actually he was a test number eight. He is a test number eight. But, you know, Jofra Archer is not a test number eight, and nor is Jack Leach. So, you know, that is a problem for England. So, you know, and that adds more pressure on those guys higher up, doesn't it? Because if you get England six down, they're almost all out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a positive person. I'd say there is a lot of promise in that batting lineup for sure. I mean, it suddenly the England team looks quite different. I mean, we've probably been saying this for a couple of years now, but things are kind of moving on a pace, aren't they? We're getting three players, but there's certainly the noises and the suggestion of from form and kind of technique or sort of manner and everything and kind of grounding some of these players have had, you know, there's lots of them, you know, Pope, Crawley, are widely talked about as players who will have long careers. So, you know, all of those people can't be wrong. Those players, yeah, they, you know, you'd hope at some point soon they will start to show the kind of form that would, you know, lay the foundation for a long test career. You know, Bracey, by all accounts, has been, you know, he's kind of come through pretty quickly, but it's been talked about for a while. So, yeah.
Crawley, double hundred last test innings he played in England, didn't he?
Yeah.
Just about.
So, there is potential, you know, there is plenty to be excited about there if it, you know, but it's a pretty tough place to forge a strong, to forge the England's test team in the future against what is going to be, you know, a pretty tricky attack to face, to put it mildly.
Sounds like you're looking forward to watching Craig Overton in action.
Yeah, and Robinson, I think.
Probably be one or the other, yeah. You imagine.
Oh, I'd rather see Robinson just for a new face.
Well,
Craig Overton, there's not much to separate them numbers-wise this summer.
No, well, so Overton's the leading wicket-taker, isn't he, in the Championship so far. I've got to say, I've never really rated him. By all accounts, he has improved in the last year or so and added a bit of pace. But when he's played Test cricket for England before, I've never been that impressed. So like you, I'd rather see Robinson, if only on that basis. Tough to argue with their numbers so far. You'd imagine it'll be one of those two, one of Wood or Stone. I hope it's Wood. And probably only one of Anderson or Broad. That seems to be the kind of England policy at the moment, doesn't it? That they just rotate those two and don't play them together. Are you happy with that these days? Do you think that's the kind of sensible way to manage them?
Well, they're not going to be resting Broad first up this summer. I mean, they don't want another outburst on their hands. So I don't know. Yes and no, I guess. I mean, there's almost, again, as we sort of, you know, as we talked about at the top of the show, we've got the number one and two test sides here this summer in home conditions, in Broad and Anderson conditions. You know, they're not going to go on forever. So I think just play them, probably. Just play them together.
Every game?
Maybe not every game. Maybe you alternate, you know, here and there. Yeah. No, I'm joking. But I think probably you could probably afford to play them in both of these tests and then, yes, probably play them at least for the first couple of tests against India.
Yeah, well, they're not playing white ball cricket.
No, and that is, yeah, it is a substantial gap between the two. So
in that sense, then maybe the only reason to not play them is for the thing of like giving other players an opportunity, sort of testing out some of these players with a view to the Ashes later in the year. And that, as much as I think you should be blooding players and that kind of thing, but actually, as an England fan, I want England to take this series against New Zealand seriously. Well, speaking of selection, just quickly, Tone, one big change this summer is that Ed Smith has gone as England's chief selector. And in fact, his post has gone with him because it's Silverwood who's now taking on that mantle as well.
Silverwood just absorbing all
selector, yeah, as well as the coach.
Power.
Not sure that Ed Smith's legacy will be remembered all that fondly. He definitely got a few things right, but in my view, got a lot of things wrong as well. Will you miss Ed Smith, Tone? How much will you miss Ed Smith?
I don't know. I think we were quite quick. Yeah, there's a lot about Ed Smith that's easy to judge quite quickly.
And mock.
And I think we probably did that, and probably a few people did. I admired his the kind of slight single-mindedness, or the kind of the maverick alchemy of his kind of process, or, you know, there was a bit of this, bit of that, bit of kind of numbers, bit of kind of gut feeling, doing things that perhaps, or, you know, taking an approach that perhaps they hadn't sort of done, or I say they thought of, I'm sure they thought of it, but, you know, the butler thing, there's a few things along the way. Whether it actually produced kind of decent results, probably not. So, just it'd be an interesting and amusing footnote in cricket history, I think, which is probably a bit harsh. Kind of, you know.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see where he pops up next. Hopefully he'll be the editor of, like, The Atlantic or something.
Yeah, I could imagine that, yeah. Monocle. Well, and he never picked you, Tony. You know,
never got the call.
He had it in for you ever since he saw you drop a catch on the beach. Do you remember this?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Burst through my fingers.
Chucking a Wibobra around in front of Ed Smith. This is actually true. Ed Smith was on the beach. We're throwing a Wibobra around. The only time he turned to look at us playing Wibobra was just at the split second that Tony dropped an incredibly easy catch. It was an absolute dolly. And Ed Smith went and turned back to his friends. And that was it.
Yeah, come on, Ed.
Didn't get the cool, Tone. Okay, Tone. Predictions then. What's your Ed Smith gut feel?
I was gonna say,
about this?
I don't
series?
Think Ed Smith's got way back.
What's your feeling? What's your scoreline here? Two tests. Oh, that was my other gripe. I never mentioned my other gripe. But yeah, one of my gripes was the Silverwood thing. But the other gripe was this is only two tests. This could easily be five tests, but certainly four. You know, and it's not like...
Hang on, just let me intervene. In one of the busiest summers, one of the busiest years of English cricket history, possibly, well, modern history, you want to squeeze in a two or three extra tests.
Yeah, on the surface, that's a good point. But what I would say is, like, don't get New Zealand here in May and June for two tests. Like, they could have come next summer, or India could have come next summer, because India were only here 3 years ago and we play India all the time. Haven't played New Zealand for 6 years. And actually, during that 6 years, New Zealand have been a very good team. It's not like this has come out of nowhere that they're suddenly one of the two best teams in the world. I don't know why we're only playing two tests. Like this, as I say, this could easily be a five-test series. So yes, I'm not saying it should have been five tests against New Zealand and five against India, but yeah, this could have been the focus of the summer, actually. Because they're two really well-matched teams. New Zealand are a very exciting team. It just seems such a shame that this is all going to be over in about 12 days.
I think that's a fair point. And it's not, you know, it's not part of the World Test Championship, so it's irrelevant anyway. So yeah, it's a bit of a shame.
True, true, true. But that being said, it is two tests. What is your prediction? It's quite tough to call, isn't it?
It's very tough. You'd think after 370 episodes, or however many this is, I would...
Yeah, what are we? 368, I think this is.
368?
There's been some bonus pods in there, too.
You'd think after all that time, I'd be like, oh, yeah, he's probably going to ask me for prediction. And I'd actually think about it before and not on the spot as you... But again, I like to...
A bead of sweat rolls down your cheek.
I like to absorb what we've discussed and the points you've made, mostly.
What I would say is there is no result that would be surprising to me here. England winning 2-0, New Zealand winning 2-0, or a 1-1 draw where both tests are incredibly close, or a 1-1 draw where they're both incredibly one-sided, but one team than the other. Literally anything could happen here, Tony. Is that a good point? Is that good analysis?
That's all right. I'm going to go for New Zealand 2-0.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. I mean, that would be really surprising to me. No, that's interesting, Tim.
I don't know. I think, yeah, New Zealand clean sweep of that and the World Test Championship.
I do think that on paper, New Zealand are the better team, substantially the better team, maybe. But with home advantage, plus, you know, you've got to factor in, like, the impact of a couple of key players. Like, you know, so, like, if Anderson just, or Broad has, you know, if one of them has an amazing game or even an amazing day against a New Zealand lineup that, you know, some of them aren't super experienced in these conditions. Like, yeah, you could see if they can keep Williamson quiet, you could see New Zealand getting rolled over once or twice, and that might be enough. But then I can also see England getting rolled over. So what's that? Dishwasher. That was surprisingly frightening to me. I don't know quite why. I am going to go 1-1. I'm going to say 1-1. Exciting stuff, though.
Well, hang on. So it starts a week today, doesn't it?
No, less than. It's next Wednesday, isn't it?
No.
Is it Wednesday or
Thursday? I've got it down as in my diary.
I don't care what you've got it down
as. It's Thursday the 3rd.
Isn't it Wednesday the 2nd?
It's not what I've got.
Where have you got that from is really the key
from
question.
My diary. My own personal artifacts.
Let's have a look. I'm Googling it. I'm sure it's Wednesday. Yeah, Wednesday the 2nd, mate.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, mate. No. Which is good because I'm working from home next Wednesday, so...
It's also going to be one of the nicest days of the year next Wednesday.
Really?
Yeah, so I'll set the old outdoor screen up.
Yeah, 11 a.m, Wednesday the 2nd of June.
So my diary's all wrong.
Well, that, I think, is going to be it for the World Cricket Show this time. Have you enjoyed this one, Tone?
Yeah, it's been good.
It's been nice to get back in the saddle, hasn't it? Get back behind the mic.
Just feeling our way in.
Yeah, although actually for you, it's a bit of a busman's holiday doing this, Tone, isn't it, on your evening off? Because all you ever seem to do at the moment is... podcasts.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah.
Do you want to plug your new show on this?
New shows, yeah. Kerr and Friends. Well, like some of the people, or lots of people who've written in over the years, I just thought, look, this just looks so easy to do. I'll do my own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very, very common recurring email we've had over years. Yeah. Well, I guess anyone can do this. So can you give me some tips on how to get started?
Well, as has been proved. But yeah, now I'm doing my own podcast. I was going to invite you on, but I thought sort of heard enough from you over the years. But yeah, doing, if anyone's interested, doing a little weekly Guernsey sport podcast. So do check that out. Cricket does feature, and actually doing some sort of cricket videos. So if you're looking at if you're looking to stay in touch with what's happening in Guernsey cricket, and why wouldn't you?
Yeah,
head to the Guernsey Press Sport accounts and you'll find the links. So I'll be there every week doing a little bit. I'll get you on at some point. We talk about Kobo 2s.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'm not sure I've got very much to say that your kind of typical Guernsey Press audience is going to be impressed with, but
I'll get you in. So check it out. Yeah. Podfollow/GP Sport Pod as well. If you just want to get the direct link.
Such a corporate man. Aren't you? Yes. But yeah, having said we've been away for a couple of months, you've done something like 25 podcasts since we last did one of these. I've listened to them all.
Well, that's good. It's good to have your support. I mean, if you want to, if listeners want to hear what it's like when I'm in the hot, in the host seat, then that's the place to go. If you want to know what the World Cricket Show could have been, then check that out.
Well, the annoying thing about it, because I have actually listened to them, and the annoying thing about it is that it's actually really professional.
Oh, cheers,
it's
mate.
Quite slick. Like the editing is good. And it did make me think, like, why have I edited 366 episodes? Because you're like, oh, I don't know how to do it. And it's like, why has he been so unprofessional for the last 12 years?
You just look like you're having so much fun. But I just didn't want to, take it away from you.
I mean, the other annoying thing about it is that despite starting a podcast in 2006 or whatever it was, 2008, am I now the only person in the world not making money out of podcasting?
Well, I'm sorry,
even you are doing this professionally now.
Technically, but
I'm stuck here like a chump.
Yeah, true.
Even half of this podcast is making money out of podcasting and it's just me.
Yeah, I mean, money is a strong word, but
Moolah.
Hey, look, we're back. We are back. And all the money is flooding into podcasting now, so... we'll be up to our necks in it by the end of the summer.
All you have to do is just put a podcast out and people just like money just pours in.
It just overwhelms you.
Trucks of money turn up at your house.
Yeah, so keep it out.
It's depressing for me, Tone. But anyway, yes, I'll keep listening to your podcast, and you know, obviously I support everything you do and the way you support everything. I, you know, you come along to all those events I organise and everything, don't you? So just
to be fair, I do actually retweet your tweets.
That's true.
Quite often.
You do. The only person in the world who occasionally retweets.
No, I just, you know, I'm interested in, you know, it's a little nod. Yeah. So I'm still there.
You use some of your clout.
Yeah, exactly.
Your blue tick clout to promote the local library.
Hey, you'll be you mentioned Kobo 2s. I'll just regale you with my first appearance of the season.
Go on.
Last week. You'll be pleased to know all is right in the world. Lasted three balls. First ball I cut for one. Second ball, well, yeah, and then...
Two balls.
Well, I was there. I always like to think of not the balls I faced, but the balls I've been kind of, you know, on the field for, in the middle for. So I was actually, you know, it's sort of three from about nine.
Right.
So I did stick around for a little while, but I was at the other end. But anyway, when I got back on strike, and then I pulled one for two, and then I was clean bowled with the next ball. All is right with the world.
Yeah.
But hey, I've actually committed because I'm not going to be... you'll know that in my previous job, I was traveling back and forth to Jersey quite a lot. I won't be doing that. So I'm going to be, you know, I've committed to play as many times as I can this summer for Kobo 2. So again, those dates are in the diary, whether I've got them right or not.
That's a really big commitment, isn't it? You've committed to play as many times as you can.
Yeah, true. There's no backing out of that.
This is a cast iron guarantee. I'll play as many times as I want to this summer.
Yeah, true.
If I have nothing better to do.
Look, I've just left myself no wiggle room here. So anyway, next game's on Monday, so keep an eye out for
that. That's
exciting. Is it on Monday?
God, what is wrong with your diary? I mean, to be fair, I didn't even know you had a diary, so...
What are we doing having a game on bank holiday Monday? Oh, no, it's the Monday after, sorry.
Okay.
Next game's on Wednesday.
All right, we're going to bring it to an end there. Thanks very much for listening, everybody. If you enjoy the show, then do get more involved on the internet, because we are on social media, you know, on your big three platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I'm sure you'll find us on there. Are we on TikTok yet?
No.
Have you heard of this TikTok, Tone?
No.
We're not on TikTok.
No.
But you can send us an email, worldcricketshow@gmail.com. And if you enjoy the show, then do consider leaving a rating and perhaps a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to this. Again, I've heard you say that on your
I stole it from you.
You're such a corporate man.
I don't want reviews.
But you also do it. The start.
I know. Desperate. No one's listening by the end.
Please review us. Please review my show. It's pathetic. So it's absolutely pathetic.
Well, you haven't reviewed it.
I have. I've left a rating though.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so I'm one of your.
What
ratings.
I really mean is leave a rating, but actually, well, I want a review.
Yeah,
a glowing, gushing review. Just review it.
Well, no, that is what you said on the most recent pod, as I remember. Please review me. And I crave your approval and your praise.
Well, you just look. I've got two reviews so far, so it's early days, though.
I'm going to leave you a one-star review.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
I'm going to stop retweeting you.
All right, stay in school, everyone. Thanks very much for coming, and we'll see you next time. We're going to be back between Test 1 and 2 of this series, and for the avoidance of doubt, this is going to be a big summer for the World Cricket Show as well. This is going to be an annus mirabilis for the World Cricket Show. Yes, please. We're going to be on the beach throughout the summer,
yeah.
Delivering, you know, podcast after podcast, and not just for the Guernsey Press.
And I'm making this commitment now. We're making a lot of commitments. I'm going to revive, we've talked about it recently, but reviving Ashes Daily okay. For the winter.
Let's do it.
And we're going to do as many Ashes Dailies as we can.
That's
a cast iron guarantee.
Big commitment.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's not like we couldn't sustain that 11 years ago when I didn't have a child. So I can't foresee any problems there. I didn't have a child. Neither of us really had, you know, jobs or, you know, stuff to do.
Yeah, other podcasts.
I'm sure that'll be fine. I'm sure that'll definitely work.
Yeah.
We'll do as many as we can. As many as we can.
We'll talk about it afterwards.
All right. That's it. I'm going. Cheers, Tane.
Cheers.
Bye for now.
I can smell your fear. Ba-da-da-ba-ba, ba-da-da-ba-ba.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.